Okay, let's unpack this. We're diving into a really powerful argument today.
Yeah, it challenges the very foundation of how we define success and wealth in our modern economy.
We're talking about Mariana Mazzucato's book, The Value of Everything. It's pretty influential.
Definitely.
So if you, like us, sometimes feel like the economic scoreboard is a bit, well, rigged, whereas some companies get hugely rich, but maybe don't seem to be producing anything tangible.
Right. You look at the profits and wonder, where's the thing?
Exactly. Then this deep dive is hopefully your shortcut to some clarity. We're using a book review and a comprehensive summary.
And boiling it down.
Yeah, distilling the core knowledge. Basically, how to spot the difference between what creates real economic value and what just sort of extracts it from wealth that's already there.
That distinction is crucial.
And the big idea we're wrestling with today is that increasingly, value extraction gets rewarded more, much more, than actual value creation.
It's a central argument. The modern economy has blurred that line almost completely.
So activities that aren't really productive get celebrated as, you know, financial genius or
Right,
something.
and the consequence. Prosperity concentrates, inequality goes up dramatically in many cases.
What's really fascinating here, as you pointed out before we started, is that this isn't just about money or policy fights.
No, not at all. It's about a fundamental shift, an intellectual one, in economic thinking itself, happened over the last century or so.
A shift that changed how we even perceive value.
Precisely. And you can't really fix a system if you don't even agree on what value actually means within that system.
Okay, absolutely. So let's start right there. How did we get here? How did we move from what sounds like a clearer understanding of value
Yeah.
to, well, this more confusing state where basically anything with a price tag is considered valuable?
Well, historically, value was the central concept in economics. You look at the classical view, people like Adam Smith, it was pretty clear-cut, relatively speaking. Value came from the cost of production, from labor, tangible inputs.
Like, if you made bread, the value was tied to the baker's work, the flour, the oven fuel.
Exactly. Real costs, real effort. But then came this pivotal shift, the rise of what we call the modern neoclassical view.
Okay, when was this?
Started around the late 19th, early 20th century. And this view basically stripped away that direct labor component.
Hunter replaced it with.
Subjectivity. Value became defined by market prices, by scarcity, by how much you, the consumer, preferred it.
Okay. So if I'm following the source material here,
Yeah.
in the classical view, the inherent value sort of determined the price.
Oroughly, yes.
But in this modern neoclassical view, it's flipped. The price determines the value.
Exactly right. That's the intellectual lever Mazzucato really pulls on. In this newer framework, if something gets a price in the market, boom, it has value. End of story. Think about it. If some incredibly complex financial derivative, basically a bet on a future risk, right? Just paper sells for $1 million.
Yeah.
The neoclassical economist just notes down $1 million of value was created. It doesn't matter if that piece of paper didn't lead to a single new factory being built or a single new job in, you know, making things.
Wow, that feels like a huge intellectual shortcut.
It is.
It means that just the act of trading something, leaving money around rather than actually making something, gets counted as productive instantly.
And that blurring, that's the core issue Mazzucato identifies. When value is just defined by whatever price the market sticks on it,
Yeah.
it becomes incredibly easy for certain actors, capitalists, to disguise activities that are purely rent-seeking or extractive, make them look like value creation.
Because if they're getting rich, the system says they must be creating value.
That's the assumption. And it really limits our ability to critique the system, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do you argue someone doesn't deserve their billions if the very definition of value confirms they generated it simply by getting that price?
Okay, so if price equals value, what's the most glaring example of this today, I'm guessing?
Finance.
You guessed right. And the history here is really interesting. For a long, long time, the financial sector, banks, insurance, investment firms was seen as, well, unproductive but necessary.
A support function.
Exactly. Its job was to help the real economy, move resources around, get money from savers to borrowers, facilitate production. It helped value creation, but wasn't seen as creating value itself.
But that changed
Yeah.
dramatically
Like
since the
yours.
1970s, right? Deregulation kicked in.
Kicked in big time. The sector just exploded in size. And crucially, it managed to redefine itself. It started being seen as a productive sector in its own right, a major contributor to GDP. But Mazzucato argues, convincingly, I think, that many actors in this hugely expanded financialized system are getting rich not by channeling resources productively,
right?
By capturing existing value from other parts of the economy, siphoning it off, basically.
Okay, how does that capture actually happen? The sources mention complex instruments, interest differentials. Can we break that down a bit?
Sure. One way is through creating and trading incredibly complex, often opaque, financial instruments. Securities, derivatives.
Yeah.
These generate huge fees for the financial institutions that create and manage them.
Right.
Often without adding much, if any, real economic benefit outside the financial circle itself. Then you have interest differentials, the gap between the low rate banks borrow at and the higher rate they lend at,
okay,
and high transaction costs on everything. These primarily enrich the financial intermediaries.
And this extractive mindset, it doesn't just stay within finance, does it? It leaks into how regular companies operate, too.
Absolutely.
This is where it gets really interesting with corporate finance, I thought. This whole focus on maximizing shareholder value. MSV.
Yes, MSV. That's a key mechanism.
The source material really highlights how when large companies, even ones that used to be very productive, get taken over or heavily influenced by private equity or certain types of venture capital, the main goal, sometimes the only goal, shifts. It's not about making better products or long-term growth anymore. It's about maximizing short-term returns for the shareholders.
And the classic tool for doing this, share buybacks.
Ah, yes. Explain those quickly.
Okay, so a share buyback is a perfect example of value extraction disguised as creation. A company has, say, billions in cash reserves.
Money that could be used for R&D, worker wages, new factories.
Exactly, productive investment. But instead, they use that cash to buy back their own shares from the stock market.
Which reduces the number of shares out there.
Precisely. Fewer shares floating around means the earnings per share, the EPS, automatically goes up, even if the company's actual profits haven't changed at all.
And why does that matter?
Because executive pay, bonuses, are very often tied directly to hitting EPS targets and boosting the stock price.
I saw.
So they're effectively taking capital that could have built future value for the company, its workers, its customers, and diverting it into a financial maneuver that mainly benefits existing shareholders and the managers themselves.
The cash is literally extracted from the company's potential future productivity.
That's the argument. A clear extraction mechanism within large finance and corporate strategy.
Okay, that's really clear. But hang on, we need to bring in the counterpoint here. Because the sources did note, fairly, that this focus on the big, maybe predatory end of finance isn't the whole story.
That's a very important nuance, yes. The critique is valid. While Mazzucato rightly focuses on the excesses, the huge banks, the short-termism, the reviewer pointed out that we can't just dismiss the entire financial sector as extractive. It plays a vital, productive role, too.
Especially for smaller players.
Exactly. Think about small and medium-sized enterprises, SMEs, startups, especially in developing countries. Where do they get the initial capital to even start, let alone grow?
From banks, from investors, the financial system.
Right. They rely heavily on these institutions. And even some complex financial instruments, while potentially extractive, can also help, say, a manufacturer manage genuine risks.
Like hedging against currency swings or commodity price jumps.
Precisely. So it's not black and white. Finance can be like a dual-use technology. It's necessary for allocating capital and risk efficiently.
But the critique is about the balance.
Yes. The argument is that the balance has tipped wildly towards extraction over productive allocation. Even think about everyday things like constant marketing for high-interest credit cards or bank billboards everywhere.
Mm.
Are those creating new value? Or are they mainly about using fees and interest to pull existing money into the bank's pockets rather than funding, say, a new product or service in the real economy?
It really is about moving the goalposts, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you just move the money around cleverly enough, you get to call yourself a value creator.
That's a good way to put it. And this idea leads us straight into the world of innovation.
Sure.
Because the extraction story there is maybe even more surprising, particularly because it heavily involves the government.
Right. Let's get into that.
Well, first, we have to challenge this persistent myth, you know,
mm-hmm.
The myth of the heroic lone genius innovator, the Steve Jobs figure, the Elon Musk taking all the risks themselves.
That's not how it really works.
Not according to the evidence Mazzucato presents. Real innovation, the sources emphasize, has key characteristics we often forget. One, it's cumulative, meaning it builds on decades, sometimes centuries, of earlier, long-term, often publicly funded foundational investments. Mm. It doesn't appear out of thin air.
Okay. cumulative net
two. Benefits. It involves massive uncertainty. Most attempts to innovate, most R&D projects actually fail. The failure rate is incredibly high.
Right. It's risky.
Very. And three, it's deeply collective. It's not one person or one company. It involves lots of different people, different types of organizations across different sectors, often public and private, working together, sometimes unknowingly.
So the state, government, isn't just some clumsy bystander or just the entity that bails everyone out during a crisis.
Far from it. The source material gives some really striking examples, foundational technologies that underpin our modern lives. GPS.
Yeah, military, right.
Exactly. But the internet itself, DARPA funded. Even touchscreen technology. Much of the early risky work funded and developed by the state, usually U.S. government agencies, often defense related.
Wow. So the smartphone in my pocket, which we think of as peak private sector success, driving huge market value for companies like Apple, is actually built on a bedrock of government risk taking.
Yeah.
That's kind of wild.
That's the core irony Mazzucato points out. The risks are socialized. The government, meaning the taxpayers, funds the long, uncertain, high failure rate research.
Okay.
But then once a technology is viable and ready for commercial application, the rewards are overwhelmingly privatized, captured by private companies.
Hmm. And this leads to another way extraction happens in innovation.
Yes, through the patent system.
Okay, now patents are meant to be good, aren't they? Encourage innovation by giving inventors a temporary monopoly so they share their knowledge eventually.
That's the theory, the intention. But in practice, Mazzucato argues, the system is often used in ways that stifle innovation, that extract value rather than create it. Through things like overly broad patent coverage, patents that last too long, and especially strategic patenting or patent hoarding.
Patent hoarding.
Yeah, where companies, especially large ones, amass huge portfolios of patents, not necessarily to build anything new themselves, but just to block potential competitors or to sue them, or to create patent thickets that make it almost impossible for smaller innovators to navigate without paying hefty licensing fees.
So it becomes a defensive wall, stopping others from building on existing knowledge.
Yeah.
Which goes against that cumulative, collective nature of innovation you mentioned.
Exactly. It hinders the very process it's supposed to encourage. And it allows firms, you see this particularly with pharmaceutical companies, to justify sky-high prices for their products. They claim, we took all the risk. We made massive investments.
The foundational research was often public?
Often, yes. So the price consumers end up paying doesn't reflect that collective value creation. You're paying a premium based on a narrative of purely private risk and reward, even when the public sector absorbed a huge chunk of the initial, most uncertain risk.
Right.
So Mazzucato's push is for the government to be seen differently, not just as a regulator or a spender, but as an active, mission-oriented value creator in its own right.
And maybe get a better return on its investments for the public.
Potentially, yes, or at least structure the partnership differently so the rewards are shared more equitably.
Okay. So let's pull this all together. What does this mean for the big picture? And maybe more importantly, what does it mean for you listening to this? If this economic calculus is fundamentally skewed, if extraction is passing itself off as creation, what are the real world consequences?
Well, the sources are pretty clear on this. The result is often this paradox. The GDP goes up.
Because transactions are happening, things are being priced.
Right. Money is moving, but the actual productive capacity of the economy doesn't necessarily increase at the same rate. We're not making enough new, genuinely useful things or improving services substantially.
So people don't actually feel better off, even if the headline number looks good.
Often, yeah. Prosperity gets concentrated. Those who master the extraction game get incredibly wealthy, while wages stagnate for many others. Inequality tends to rise, sometimes sharply.
Which suggests we need some fundamental changes.
Definitely. Starting with how we even measure success. We need to look beyond just GDP, that simple price times quantity figure.
Because if complex financial engineering that might blow up later counts the same as building a bridge or educating a child,
then the measure isn't telling you much about the real health or quality of life in an economy, is it? We arguably need measures that better reflect genuine long-term value creation and well-being.
So for someone listening, the real takeaway here is a new tool, right? A new lens.
Exactly. This analysis gives you a powerful way to look at the businesses you interact with, the services you use, even government policies.
You could start asking that question. Is this company, this activity, really making something new or better? Or is it primarily finding clever ways to extract wealth from existing systems, from consumers, from workers, from the state.
It gives you that framework for critical thinking about the economy around you.
Yeah.
And connecting it to the really big picture. Mazzucato's work isn't just about tinkering around the edges or complaining about capitalism's flaws.
No.
No, it's a much deeper challenge. It's challenging the underlying economic theory that justifies and even encourages those flaws. She's basically saying we need to start taking the current definition of value for granted and reopen that fundamental debate, what is the value of everything?
Hmm.
And, you know, that debate even filters down to how we think about rewarding people, about wages. Well, if we really buy into the idea that we should reward value creators, people actually making tangible contributions, then we have to look at where national income actually goes.
Okay.
If the creators deserve a bigger slice of the pie, how should governments maybe rethink things like the minimum wage? Is it just a baseline for survival? Or should it perhaps be designed to better reflect the actual productive value someone's labor contributes?
Ensuring the system rewards creation,
yeah.
Not just existence within the system.
Right. Making sure that those genuinely creating value are appropriately compensated, properly incentivized. It's definitely something worth mulling over as we think about building a fairer, more productive economy.